another episode of Fool's Daily. Oh, that was that crash bang wallop was obviously something falling off the Millennium Falcon. That's what it was. Another piece.
And don't worry, kid, I've made a lot of special modifications myself.
That's what you tell all the girls. It's Mr. Joel Henry.
Hi, Mike.
Hello. And he has come to talk to me about X-Wing. The uber gaming hotness at the moment.
I think it's been on the scene for a couple of years, I suppose, but certainly something that's finally kicked off with me. And it is so much fun that, yes, I felt the need to come and chat.
So, you know, we'll probably litter X-Wing and, you know, TIE Fighter sounds through the show. But, so what is it, Joel? What is X-Wing? Okay. For people who've been living under a rock.
Well, similar to the Wings of War mechanics and your own personal of a Star Trek Attack Wing, Fantasy Flight Games, a couple of years ago, brought out X-Wing the Miniatures game, where you get to dogfight in the Star Wars universe with all the starfighters that you know were from, in my case, that make up my childhood. So X-Wing fighters versus TIE fighters dodging around asteroids and zapping laser beams at each other, and it's awesome sauce. And it's just pure dog fun, miniatures tactical game.
Okay, so as you say, it uses the Wings of War? Yeah, Wings of War. Don't want to get the wrong name. I almost said something different. The Wings of War mechanics. So it's very much a fixed movement game.
Mm-hmm.
In that you've got range rulers and you've got movement rulers and things. So talk us through a typical turn of the game, you know, of the basic game.
Sure. In terms of the game, you and your opponent each have a maneuver dial for each of your ships. The maneuver dial is particular to what kind of ship it is. So a TIE fighter moves in a slightly different way, of a different range of maneuvers to an X-Wing. You each choose a maneuver for your ship and hide that maneuver. And once all the maneuvers are set, you then reveal them, starting with the least skilled pilot, who's usually one of the Empire. I think they just put anyone in one of those TIE fighters and say, "Get out there, lad." And they
had cool uniforms.
They did, yeah, which means they probably can't see as well. Probably doesn't help.
That's probably true, yeah.
Based on the shooting skill, that's what I've got to assume. They just don't see anything. Let's put you in this black visored helmet and then put you in a spaceship which is black, looking at something that is black. You're bound to hit something, lad. he flips over your moving dial and makes that particular move. Providing he hasn't smashed into another ship or an asteroid, he then gets to take an action, which could be to maybe focus on an opponent or become evasive or perhaps even perform a barrel roll as a TIE fighter and sort of jinky about a bit. And you then reveal all the other pilots in terms of this, and they all perform the manoeuvres until we finish with the guy who's the most skilled pilot. And then we enter the combat phase, where we go down into everyone starts shooting each other, starting with the most skilled pilot. So the most skilled pilot moves last and shoots first.
Okay.
Which is kind of similar to his ability to react to the other ships a bit better.
Yeah.
You know, faster reaction speed or, you know, better experience or something like that. You resolve all the shots, see if anyone's dead, and, you know, if providing you've still got ships left, the game moves on to next turn. And you play until all the opposing ships have been destroyed.
Okay, and that pretty much is it, isn't it?
Yeah,
I mean, it's the same as Star Trek Attack Wing. I mean,
it's clean cut.
You move, you do something, you shoot, and then you have another go.
Yeah, it's really simple. It's dead easy to pick up for anyone, practically of any age, and it's so much fun just to play. For me, it takes me right back to what, I mean, I grew up with the Star Wars universe. That pretty much defines my childhood. If I had a personal national anthem sort of thing, it would be the Star Wars theme music. That's the thing that can make me raise my raise my chin. It's like the geek national anthem, I'm sure. And it's getting to finally sort of play around with these ships and make all the silly noises and do all the quotes with your mates while you're playing is just, you know, geek heaven. And it's something so fast to play. I mean, you get a typical game will last 30 minutes, maybe.
Okay.
That you can easily fit one or two in, you know, after a night of gaming at the club or, you know, while waiting for another game to end or something like that. It kind of fits about the perfect niche for me.
Okay. So how do you pick your ships? I mean, is it the same as Attack Wing that you have different level pilot, you know, that an X-Wing isn't actually all the same. It's an X-Wing piloted by someone and it might have some modifications and
yeah,
that sort of thing.
To an extent, one thing I think that differs from the Attack Wing is that, well, I think with one exception of the ships in the game, all the ships have the same stats. For every TIE fighter is a TIE fighter.
Okay.
They'll have the same amount of attack dice, agility dice, hull points and shields as okay. any other TIE fighter in the game. But then, if you have a particular pilot in it, they might have a special ability that they then add. So, you know, a TIE Advanced would have, you know, a certain stat range. Darth Vader in his TIE Advanced is the same ship, but with Darth Vader's ability.
Right.
Which is the ability to take two actions, which is rather good.
Okay.
And he will cost a bit more basic points. Certain pilots have certain access to certain more upgrades than others. So your bog standard rookie X-Wing pilots, for example, might not have any ability to do upgrades other than a simple modification, which might, you know, boost their shield or the hull a little bit. But the more experienced pilots, the more the ones that cost more, also get different upgrade options and choices as well to really customize the ships out a little bit.
Okay. And how well balanced are the ships against each other?
Pretty well, actually. Certainly, I've played both sides, Rebels and Imperial, against each other. And I find myself doing pretty much well with both sides. There's a distinct flavour difference between the two sides in that. In the Imperials, they don't tend to have many shields, or indeed many hull points. They tend to get blown up quite quickly. As shots hit them, hitting almost directly on the hulls, and that's that for them.
Right.
But they also tend to be cheaper and more of them.
Okay.
They also tend to be slightly more manoeuvrable. The TIE fighters are a bit nippier. As where things like the Rebels with their X-Wings and the like tend to have slightly less manoeuvrable ships, but much tougher to take down.
Okay.
And as a result, slightly more expensive. So the basic game you get in the starter box is one X-Wing and two TIE fighters, and that's pretty much balanced. Right there.
Okay. What about the bigger ships? Not the brand new ones, but, you know, things like the Falcon and Slave One.
Yep. And there's three of them actually. There's also they brought out the Lambda shuttle.
The
shuttle that we see in Return of the Jedi quite a bit.
They're
much bigger base for manoeuvring around, and they've got quite a lot more interesting talents too. One thing that the Falcon has is a 360 degree firing arc.
Okay.
Primary weapons, which means there is no safe spot to hide from. It's got turret guns on top, so it can pretty much shoot whatever it likes. Boba Fett's ship, the Slave One, the Fire Spray, that can shoot in forward and back arcs. And the Lambda shuttle can do something that no other ship in the game can do, and that's not move. You can actually hover.
All right.
Which can sometimes tactically be quite useful. These have certainly added some new dimensions to the game, and, you know, everyone loves flying the Millennium Falcon around because it's just cool. They're certainly a different type of game when you've got them in there, but they fit in quite well and are quite well balanced too. It's because it changes how you might want to play. They've done a good job of releasing, I think, four waves of ships now for this. So we've actually got quite a lot of the ships that are sort of mentioned in and out of the canon films, too. They've gone to the rest of the books and stuff, and the fictions and the comics that follow on from this, the expanded universe, and they've brought us some ships in from there as well.
Yeah, which of course after last week is no longer canon.
Well, yes, yeah.
after years, I mean, because I remember when the Timothy's Arm books first came out, with Thrawn, etc. I read those and over and over again because I really enjoyed that expanded thing. But of course now. It's not actually canon after being canon for what must be 20 years since those came out.
Yeah, it's sort of going to change things around, but you know, I'm sure that people don't mind too much.
I'm sure they probably don't. So yeah, I mean, certainly when you see the waves come out, you do see more and more ship designs that you think, where was that in the movie? Or because they sort of, the first wave was Ties and X's and Y's, and then you got sort of A's and B's and
interceptors.
But now, what was the one? The trifoil TIE fighter
the
design.
It's coming.
The Phantom. That's what it's called.
Out at the end of this month, I'll start with the next one, which is a TIE fighter with a cloaking device.
All right. Okay.
So that'll be quite nippy.
And then I noticed, and they've just brought out two really big ships, haven't they?
They have for the Rebels, which were in the movies, the blockade runner from the start of New Hope, the Tantive IV, and the Rebel transport, which we see in from the escape from Hoth in Empire. Yes, I haven't got those myself because those are quite expensive ships for me at the moment.
Well, that's what I was going to come on to. I mean, because it's the same issue with Attack Wing. Mm. That, you know, a ship costs what, 10, 11 pounds?
Yeah, 11, 12 quid, something like that, yeah.
How many, I mean, in Attack Wing you need sort of three ships to play a 100 point game. I mean, is it the same for X-Wing or do you
Yeah.
Or do the Imperials end up having more?
They can go as well with three ships if you really take out some of the specialist pilots and then upgrade the hell out of them, which, you know, could be a valid strategy. But, yeah, somewhere between three and six ships for the Imperials, probably 100 points.
Okay. And so you're sort of looking at an investment of the starter box has got two ties and then four add-on packs, I suppose.
Yeah, and that'll probably do you, if that's all you need. I was lucky with mine. I actually won my initial stuff with store credit for winning a Malifaux competition.
Oh, okay.
And there wasn't any Malifaux in the store I was at. So I went, right, that'll be Money and Falcon, a Slave War, and a starting box set, a couple of those. Thank you very much. And then it took me a year to actually open any of them, and each time I'd gone around various game shows, I'd gone, ooh, that's pretty. And over the course of months, just picked up more and more ships. So I think I'm up to 20... Right. 23, 24 ships at the moment.
Okay. So, I mean, the other questions that I have about it, I mean, obviously, we've said on the show before, I prefer Attack Wing because I prefer the idea of capital ships versus fighters. But how does it work out with just the two forces? And do you see them expanding into prequel territory and bringing out, you know, the droid fleet, for example?
That could be quite cool. There's been no rumours that I've heard or seen to say that there will. And there is still, if they're going from the future books, there's still plenty of stuff they can bring out.
Right, okay.
To go that bit further into the without having to go back 20 years into the past. But, you know, over the fullness of the time, why not? There's some cool-looking ships that could work in different ways. But at the moment, with the having Rebels and Imperial, it just seems to work. You do in Palpatine tournaments get into conditions where you're having effectively a civil war. So
right. I was going to say. I mean, that must come up quite a lot.
But you get double agents and defectors and stuff like that. You can easily go through it, can't you? You know, bounty hunters can, you know, eventually you can see them also just being mercenary from either side, even though they're allied with the Imperials. It's not some, for me, it's the cinematics of the actual movie shine through. I tend to play ships which have that movie feel. For example, if I'm using the Falcon, hands driving it. I don't care how many points cost, I don't know if he, I don't care if he's not suitable, hand driving it because it's the Falcon.
Right.
So I tend to play with that movie thing very much in mind, you know, very fully. And as long as I'm doing that, I'm kind of happy. So the point of view of just actual sort of playing it around is I still get all the cinematic moments with it. Right. As long as I've got that, then I'm going to be a happy bunny with this game.
Okay. I suppose we should talk about terrain, as it is like a tabletop game.
Yep.
There's plenty of places that make star mats, or there's some excellent videos online for making your own if you've got access to coloured sprays or an airbrush.
Yep. I know Richard B, Workbench Warriors, he's going to be doing me one, which is great.
Cool. And what do you do for terrain and you know, asteroids and things?
Yeah, the actual box set comes with some asteroid tokens, which are kind of flat pieces of card. But what I've actually done is I went to the Gale Force 9 battlefield in the box, and they do a pack of 8 asteroids.
Yeah.
And they look a lot nicer, so I've gone with those instead. And
yeah, that's what I have as well for Attack Wing.
Having looked at them, I think I could probably gone to a pet shop and got some sponge and sprayed it grey and give it a quick white grey dry brush, and probably had a similar effect.
But it wouldn't have that. They have nice weight, those girls.
They do.
Ones, though. They do feel weighty.
Yeah, they're pretty cool.
Do you do any planets or anything?
Haven't yet. The kind of dogfighting on asteroids I can see, but because planets would be a very different scale from the fighters, as opposed to, I think, your capital ships in Star Trek.
Yeah.
I've kind of not done that yet.
You've kind of stayed away from it.
Yeah.
Cool.
I might think of using an actual sort of, well, the first part of me thought a big Lego ship, because I have all the Lego Star Wars ships. So I could do like a Star Destroyer over in one corner as a bit of terrain as well, since I just have it. Because the one thing, the capital ships in Star Wars are so much bigger than the fighters, that something like a Star Destroyer will be bigger than the 3-foot board you play on.
Yeah. See, that would you see, if they did expand X-Wing out to be, I don't know what they were, I mean, still call it X-Wing, I suppose, to have capital ships, basically. But you either did fighter versus fighter or capital ship versus capital ship.
Yeah.
Then I would come back to it, because you know, I would be there on the executor going, destroy the rebel scum!
One thing I'm looking at doing is maybe doing a board just out of plastic cartons, I think, that I'll spray up, and actually doing the surface of the Death Star.
Oh, right, a 3D
Death Star. Yeah, and do a trench run kind of thing.
That would be very, very cool.
So you could have some like towers and the turbo lasers and stuff on the board as well. And the fighters nipping around them.
So you highly recommend it, then?
Oh, absolutely. Anyone who loves Star Wars and is into their tabletop gaming at all should be getting into this, just because it's such a good laugh.
All right, I've got a question for you, actually. I mean, because you're a well-known UK wargamer. I had this discussion with Conrad about Attack Wing and X-Wing, actually, where he was making the argument that they were very much precision war games, and that, you know, absolute movement was key and things like that. And I was arguing that they're not designed as precision war games, because if they were designed as precision war games, they would be played on a hex mat, and you wouldn't have range rulers and things, with all the vagaries of range rulers that bring into a game.
Mm.
What's your thought on that?
I think I'm going to fall somewhere between the two. I can see what Connor's saying, where it is about, there's a certain amount of fixed movement you can do, where if you know how long the parts of the range ruler are, and you know how wide the ship space is, then mathematical calculation of exactly where someone will be is very possible.
Right.
If you get into the game enough. I mean, there are certain strategy videos you could watch online on YouTube, which will walk you through things like that, how to fly in formation and how to gauge the distance from the opponent, therefore close to a certain range where your guns will be more effective than theirs. TIE fighters like to get in close because that's when they do more damage. X-Wings tend to want to not do that because they have access to missiles which are only effective at longer ranges.
Okay.
So there are certain things you could do, you can work on that, and the sort of precision tacticalness of doing that. But it's not like chess or a hex grid where there were certain key moves because you have the flexibility of the range rulers. So there's a certain flexibility to it as well. But I certainly think, as opposed to, say, a game like Malifaux, where we know movement is important there, but it's very varied because anyone can basically go anywhere.
Yeah.
It's more fixed than that. There's a more logical precision to it, almost a more mathematical side to it. I would say, do you know, at least geometric word to it, which you can certainly use a different skill set to other games I'm playing at the moment. So there's a certain degree of precision involved, but for me, when I am playing it, it's about dodging, flying, zipping, and making silly chip sounds, so I'm sorted.
I was going to say, do you make noises?
Yes, absolutely, all the time. And quartz fly everywhere. I even had Graham making Wookiee sound effects last time he played.
That's it. Well, on that note, I think, as we're well over time, I think we should call it. Thanks for coming on.
Oh, anytime.
Until next time, I've been Mike.
And I've been Joel.
Bye-bye. You can contact Fools Daily on Twitter, we're at fools_daily, or via email, foolsdaily@outlook.com.